Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Last week, we heard much of the first half of an interesting film documentary called Ethos. And today, we'll hear much of the second half. Ethos is a quirky film with some fine insights and some good analysis by experts, Chalmers Johnson and Noam Chomsky among them. The film is about the unholy alliance of big business and big government, and about their love of war, which they find very profitable indeed, and about their own war against democracy. If you missed last week's selection, you can start with this week's easily enough. And you'll find links to both parts at our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. This week, the movie begins talking about the ongoing war the United States is waging in the Middle East. It nicely catalogs many of the administration's lies that began the war, a war that is still going after more than a decade. The film does not recap all the lies. Hey, remember the yellow cake uranium Saddam Hussein supposedly obtained from Niger? They even forged a receipt from the government of Niger. It took a retired ambassador about 11 seconds to prove that the receipt was a forgery. But no matter. So we don't get all the lies, but we get a big enough sample to remind us how big and indefensible a war crime was our government's destruction of Iraq. Our assaults on both Iraq and Afghanistan had nothing to do with terrorism and nothing to do with Osama bin Laden either, let alone with liberating the people of either country. In the case of Afghanistan, I think the movie's analysis is especially good. Our military invasion is all about securing and controlling land for a pipeline that big oil wants to build from the Caspian Basin to the sea. It runs right through Afghanistan. We supported the Taliban government of Afghanistan for years, but finally we decided that the Taliban would not reliably secure and protect the pipeline for the U.S. So we overthrew them. So who is going to secure the pipeline? Apparently, the brute force of the U.S. and NATO joint war machine. Let's have a listen. The Scottish voice you'll hear throughout is filmmaker Pete McGrane. The Texas voice is Woody Harrelson. And the English voice is Robin Upton, who adapted the film to radio. My voice you know by now, and perhaps have heard plenty of already. So on we go to the 2011 documentary Ethos.
There's no debate. There's no attempt to lay out for the nation the pros and cons of this particular war.
We have a Congress that failed in every way to ask the right questions, to hold the president to account. Our Congress failed us miserably, and that's because many in Congress are beholden to the military-industrial complex.
The defense budget is $750 billion. Profits went up last year well over 25%. I guarantee you, when war becomes that profitable, you're going to see more of it.
We have a process that it has a seamlessness where the corporate interests that stand to benefit are so intertwined and interwoven with the political forces that the financial elites and the political elites have become the same people.
The war with Iraq gives us a snapshot in time where we can see the effects of all these powerful influences coming together.
They have weapons of mass destruction. That is what this war was about. Saddam Hussein possesses biological and chemical weapons. The fact that there are weapons there. You've heard the president say repeatedly that he has chemical and biological weapons. That Saddam Hussein still has chemical and biological weapons, and he is moving ever closer to developing a nuclear weapon. Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles, high-strength aluminum tubes, suitable for nuclear weapons production.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
They have weapons of mass destruction. That is what this war was about.
There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
Saddam Hussein is a homicidal dictator who is addicted to weapons of mass destruction.
With the drumbeat for an attack on Iraq increasing, the Bush administration may finally have the ammunition they've been looking for.
The type of war coverage we see in the United States is exactly what you'd expect with a system dominated by a handful of very wealthy corporations that benefit by having a world run by the United States to make the world profitable for them.
Against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
Saddam Hussein is a homicidal dictator who is addicted to weapons of mass destruction.
With the drumbeat for an attack on Iraq increasing, the Bush administration may finally have the ammunition they've been looking for.
The type of war coverage we see in the United States is exactly what you'd expect with a system dominated by a handful of very wealthy corporations that benefit by having a world run by the United States to make the world profitable for them.
They have weapons of mass destruction.
September 11th.
September 11th.
September 11th. September 11th.
Dangerous world.
A grave new threat.
Yeah. Horrific acts of atrocities. Murderous regimes dedicating to killing us.
There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against
a Hollywood set designer was brought in to create a $200,000 backdrop for official war briefings.
In USA Today and in the major network coverage and so forth, you had this very elaborate computer-generated graphic sort of coverage of the different U.S. Air Force and Army planes and gunships and helicopters and very snazzy weapons of all descriptions.
Well, it's quite amazing. I've fallen almost in love with the F-18 Super Hornet because it's quite a versatile plane.
It's not enough for us to be told to accept this war. We're really encouraged to gain some kind of vicarious pleasure from it.
Full-length DVD presented by Tom Brokaw, Operation Iraqi Freedom. Log on to shopnbc.com and get it today.
Calling it Code Orange Plus. The Fed's decision to raise the terror alert to high. America on high alert from biggest cities to smallest towns.
We have every reason to assume the worst.
The Pentagon, for many years now, since Vietnam, has worked extremely hard at shaping news and how the media reports that news. We train people to say certain things in a certain way.
Well, a militia group linked to terror being backed by Iran and setting up camp on America's doorstep.
Al-Qaeda in Iran. These people are out to kill us.
People don't understand the danger that this country poses to the world.
The propaganda campaign waged by the media was so successful that by 2003, opinion polls showed the vast majority of Americans believed Saddam Hussein was linked to 9/11. This claim was false. The majority believed he possessed stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. This claim, too, was false. These claims allowed the corporate interests and the administration to frame the attack on Iraq as a justifiable act of self-defense. Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski worked at the Pentagon. She saw firsthand how the intelligence was distorted to win support for the attack.
The information in there, drawn from fact, you could find bits and pieces of fact throughout, but framed, articulated, crafted to convince someone of what? Well, of things that weren't true. Things that weren't true. 911, Al-Qaeda related to Saddam Hussein, possibly some involvement there. The very things that a year later, President Bush himself denies and feigns his surprise. I don't know why everybody thinks that.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Well, I worked in a place where they concentrated on preparing this storyline and selling it.
There's no doubt that Saddam Hussein was a tyrant, a thug, a butcher. It's true. It was as true in 2003 as it was in 1983-84 when Donald Rumsfeld visited Iraq and met with Saddam Hussein and other top officials as an emissary of the Reagan administration to improve ties to Iraq. It was true in 1988 when Saddam gassed the Kurdish people in the north of Iraq with the implicit support of the United States.
But what they're trying to do is have an Iraq that is a friend to us, not an Iraq that is liberated. This is total bogus. We never intended to liberate the Iraqi people. We intended to liberate Iraq from Saddam and have a footprint, a military footprint there. And we've done that now. We have Kuwait, we have Fifth Fleet in Bahrain, we have a nice base in Qatar, but it's a little too far south. And what do we have? We have four bases in Iraq.
beautiful bases. We can hit Syria, we can hit Iran, we can keep tabs on Afghanistan. There's all kinds of things we can do from those bases.
Stan Goff, ex-U.S. Army.
The larger picture is being driven by the fact that we're about to hit peak oil worldwide, that there's this sort of emerging global competition between us and China. There's the ongoing economic rivalries between us and Europe. And so Southwest Asia becomes geopolitically a linchpin.
Max Wolf, Department of Economics, University of Massachusetts.
And the idea is, if you want to have real leverage or control in the future global economy, if you can sit back and control the tap for natural gas mostly, and oil secondly, but very importantly, that will give you enormous strategic power in the world.
If you map the pipeline, proposed pipeline route across Afghanistan, and you look at our bases, matches perfectly. Our bases are there to solve a problem that Taliban could not solve. Taliban couldn't provide security in that part of Afghanistan. Well, now that's where our bases are. So, is that have to do with Osama bin Laden?
The context is the desire of the United States to control these strategically crucial regions. The pretext, that is the excuse for going in Afghanistan, was about terrorism and Osama bin Laden. In Iraq, it's about weapons of mass destruction and Saddam Hussein. But in the end, neither one of those wars was really about those people or those regimes. It was about securing and solidifying American control over these incredibly important regions of the world.
American power and American empire is actually flaunted in people's faces around the world, where we rub our shoe in their face and tell them that we're top dog and you will work with us because you sure as hell don't want to be against us.
The world has changed and we're not going back to where we were. I find one of the sillier ideas is the notion, and you hear it all the time, American policy has been hijacked by a handful of people, and as soon as they're out of there, we're going to go back to the way it was. They're wrong about that.
I think the history of the United States as a work in progress and our attempt at democracy here is a constant struggle between capitalism and democracy. And there have been ebbs and flows where democracy looks like it's winning. You rein in those powerful forces. But the fundamental reality is that most of the government's decisions today are substantially dictated by powerful corporate interests. Clearly, capitalism is winning.
The origin of the phrase shock and awe and the whole theory of modern warfare date back to a 1996 advisory report written by Harland Ullman of the National War College. Quote, "The aim of modern warfare, by means of sheer intimidation, is to inflict a deep psychological injury, to scare and terrorize through the massive application of force directed at the public will. The aim is to impose a regime of shock and awe through instant and incomprehensible levels of massive destructive power directed at influencing society writ large through utterly brutal and ruthless application of force."
On New World Notes, we're listening to a 2011 documentary by Pete McGrain. It's called Ethos, which is classical Greek for character. We heard a very lucid explanation of why we are conducting a war in Afghanistan. By we, of course, I mean the psychopathic warmongers on the Potomac, not me and my listeners. You're welcome, don't mention it. Speaking of Afghanistan, if I had more strength of character, I could have resisted the temptation to put on the Ventures hit song, Pipeline, which you're hearing in the background. But I'm not that good. Much of the remainder of the movie is good indeed. A head-scratcher comes at the end when both McGrain and Harrelson assure us that we can restore democracy, stop war, and save the ecosystem by making wise consumer choices. What the heck? Well, let me not knock the end of the movie before you've had a chance to hear it. Here we go again with Ethos.
That is the reality of shock and awe. That young boy was innocent, as were the people of 9/11. And this is how violence begets violence. For anyone who doesn't yet know, our corporations have been in the Middle East trampling on their beliefs and customs since they discovered oil. Our corporations will tell us they are just getting us the things we need, and there is truth in that. But we have to decide what price we are willing to pay. We as individuals drive the demand for these resources. As long as we are all aware of the fact that there is blood in this oil, and that is the decision that we make, then so be it.
Barack Obama continues the military build-up in the Middle East, as George Bush did before him. Note the 10th anniversary of Guantanamo Bay last week, in spite of Barack Obama's promises to close it. The ghost of Christmas future.
It's completely understandable that people bury their heads in the sand, and if we don't look too closely, life doesn't seem too bad in many areas of the world. But that is going to change, and there are some logical outcomes to the way this system works that will affect every one of us.
Mark Barry, author of Spooked, Espionage in Corporate America.
I was invited to Washington, D.C. to attend this meeting that was being put together by the National Security Agency called the Critical Thinking Consortium. I remember standing there in this room and looking over on one side of the room, and we had CIA, NSA, DIA, FBI, Customs, Secret Service, and then on the other side of the room we had Coca-Cola, Mobil Oil, GTE, and Kodak. And I remember thinking, I am like in the epicenter of the intelligence industry right now. I mean, the line is not just blurring, it's just not there anymore. And to me, it spoke volumes as to how industry and government were consulting with each other and working with each other.
On August 20th, 2007, at the protest against the Security Prosperity Partnership Leaders Summit in Montebello, Quebec, three police officers, dressed as radical protesters with rocks in their hands, were confronted by legitimate protesters and accused of trying to incite a riot.
Go on, it's our line! It's a peaceful demonstration!
Would the government prefer a violent confrontation between protesters and police in order to discredit the protesters and ignore their message?
Okay, this is eyewitness video is under house arrest in St. Paul. It's the subject line.
We had colleagues in Minneapolis had all their video equipment and computers taken about a week ago.
Eyewitness video was remarkably successful in exposing police misconduct and outright perjury by police during the 2004 RNC.
Initial news report in the Army Times newspaper last month noted, in addition to urgent emergency response, the force, quote, may be called upon to help with civil unrest and crowd control. Did this surprise you?
It did. It surprised me also that NORTHCOM itself was involved in intelligence sharing with local police officers in St. Paul. I mean, what in the world is NORTHCOM doing looking at what some of the protesters are involved in? And you had infiltration up there, too. But what we have going on in this country is we have infiltration and spying that goes on not only at the, all the way from the campus police practically, Amy, up to the Pentagon and the National Security Agency. We're becoming a police state here. And if we looked at national Security Presidential Directive 51 that he signed on May 9th of 2007, Amy. This gives the president enormous powers to declare a catastrophic emergency and to bypass our regular system of laws, essentially, to impose a form of martial law.
The Patriot Act was passed here in the United States without public debate, without any debate by Congress, just passed. It's a frontal assault on the Constitution.
Right now, as we talk, the Fourth and Sixth Amendments to the Constitution, to the Bill of Rights, are dead letters.
Both of these bills were written into the Constitution by the Founding Fathers in order to protect the people of America from the government of America. Right now, the right to freedom of speech, the right to free assembly, and the right to a fair trial are no longer protected by law.
The result of the Patriot Act, the Military Tribunal Act, and many other bills written in the name of Homeland Security is that almost any action, speech, or protest against the government can be construed legally as terrorism. Your home can be searched secretly without a warrant. You can be arrested with no charges revealed to you. You can be detained indefinitely and tortured without any protection under the law. In 2005, Congress passed the Real ID Act. Soon, we will be required to carry ID cards by law. There are plans to equip these cards with RFID tracking chips that will be able to track your every move. These tracking chips are already in all new passports. Many believe this will eventually lead to the implanted chip, which is already being used in many places in our society.
We have a Florida family who are really pioneers in a brave new world. They have volunteered to be the first ever to have microchip identification devices implanted into their bodies.
After 9/11, I was really concerned with the security of my family.
I wouldn't mind having something planted permanently in my arm that would identify me.
It is not difficult to see a future where we are all locked in to a monitored control grid, where every move and all transactions will be tracked, monitored, and recorded. And if anyone gets out of line, they can just turn off their chip. Could the sense of fear and isolation prevalent in our society allow us to accept totalitarian measures of this nature? And if we become scared enough, might we not even demand them? Has our sense of fear and division detached us from reality? It is not too difficult to imagine that many of our fears are manufactured for us. History shows us that many in power have used fear to manipulate societies, and there are those who would benefit from a totalitarian world government.
We shall have one world government, whether or not we like it. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent. Paul Warburg, Council on Foreign Relations and Architect of the Federal Reserve System.
There are some very troubling possible futures for our society. Climate change will displace millions of people, and we'll hit peak oil in 2015. Thereafter, the price of oil will skyrocket. So we'll see supply decrease, and we'll see prices of basic foods and every basic commodity spiral upwards. Our current world population is just under 7 billion, and that figure will double approximately every 35 years. So take a look at where you live. Try to imagine double the amount of people, twice the demand for resources, double the amount of pollution. Massive changes are coming whether we like it or not. I'm not a politician. I'm not looking for your vote, so I can give it to you straight. This system cannot continue. So who will make the decisions about who gets food to eat or who goes hungry or who gets water to drink and who goes without? Because the idea of allowing mindless corporations or wealthy elites to make decisions about population control is terrifying.
The great heroes of our times, people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King, incredible though they were, could not create change on their own. Only the will of the people can do that. And together, we can accomplish anything.
Any system that places money and profit above all else has an Achilles heel, the bottom line.
Interestingly, the way to win back democracy, end the wars, and save our environment has just one cure. And it's simple. We live in a capitalist system. Everything we do is based on the exchange of money. The media and the advertising men have turned us into obedient little consumers trying to buy ourselves to happiness in a throwaway society. This creates such a demand on our resources that our corporations invade other countries to get more, causing untold war and conflict. Then, using the wealth and power that we give them, corporations undermine democracy and justice. However, the unlikely and ironic outcome of consumerism is that it makes you, the consumer, all-powerful. The way we use money has more influence in our society than anything else, and the way we choose to spend our money can change everything.
No company will continue a practice or a product that you, the consumer, will not buy. It's vitally important that you understand this, because this gives you ultimate power to change the world you live in. Companies are extremely sensitive about you buying their products, because if you don't buy their stuff, they go out of business. That's not something any company is willing to consider. And by choosing to spend your money wisely, you can promote those companies that do business in a socially responsible way.
Without saying a word, you will have sent a clear message that they simply cannot ignore. It will be heard, heeded, and acted upon, guaranteed. This is real power.
For example, if a company pollutes the environment or uses bad business practices, if you don't buy their stuff, they will change. If you don't want food with chemicals or GMOs in it, then don't buy it.
Basic foods and cleaning products make up 70% of our weekly purchases. This drives the agriculture and chemical industries that have a massive effect on our environment. If we can start making the right choices about these simple everyday purchases, we can save our environment.
We got into the habit of buying junk fast foods that have no actual food in them. We buy gallons of poisonous household cleaners when one degradable soft soap will do. We are poisoning our homes and wasting our hard-earned money for no good reason. Why? Because the advertising industry tells us to. They just want you to buy stuff.
Do not underestimate the power of that dollar bill in your pocket. The way you spend that dollar already affects economies and lives around the world. Spent wisely, it can fix every problem known to man.
And here, let us bid adieu to Ethos, the movie. It goes on for a few more minutes in this vein. The movie showed very well the plunder of the planet by the oligarchy, the corporate elite hand in glove with the political elite, and using the world's largest military machine, not only abroad, but increasingly at home, to violently seize the world's declining resources and destroy all opposition and all democracy. And then the movie reveals the easy solution. We can stop all this by being good consumers and shopping wisely. There is a polite term for this conclusion, and that is non sequitur. And I'll skip the impolite terms because we're out of time. I've shortened the film for airplay. You can find Robin Upton's radio adaptation uncut, and also a link to the film itself, on the web at unwelcomeguests.net/586. And you'll also find a link at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Thanks again to Robin and to unwelcomeguests.net. And thank you for listening. New World Notes comes to you from the East of the River Satellite Studios and Skunk Works of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust, advising illegitimi non carborundum, shop wisely. I can't mention brand names, but if you're in the market for nuclear-armed submarines, the ones we make here in Connecticut are pretty slick and carry a full 6-month limited warranty. Enough said. Ciao!